He is Robin Leach. He is Jade Markin. This is Car Keys.
And it is indeed. And I am in the process of reviewing a couple of car articles, and we'll start with my thoughts about the GTI, which was in the August issue of Car and Driver. And the one thing I came away from reading the four-page review, and that's what it was in this magazine, is that all the comments that were alluded to or made out about the coming 2022 version of the GTI, I think, to be due late in 2021, is that most of the comments made about its improvement over the preceding model, which was last done in, I think, 2015, is that the car was traveling at speeds, I would say probably over 100 miles an hour and maybe over 120 miles an hour for most of this reporter's review of the differences that he could feel between the coming model and the last version of the model. And so my comment to our listeners is, if you have a GTI from 2015 to current, you have a GTI that probably isn't going to feel a whole lot different and outdated than the new GTI. I'm probably a little bit wrong in this summation, and maybe Jay will chime in after he's listened to me. But everything in here was all about high speed, sharpness of handling, stability control, its ability to absorb bumps, because it does have new programmable shock absorbers in one of the option packages you can get. I think it's called the Dynamic Chassis Control DCC system. And with faster damper adjustments. But I don't think, I'm wondering what would happen if Jay, and you would, I'd like you to comment on this, if they were to test this car at the speeds that we Americans can generally drive on, which I would say is mostly at 80 miles an hour or below on, what, 95% of our highways? Well, and whether or not this new forthcoming GTI is going to be better at those speeds than the preceding model, which was already deemed to be one of their 10 best CDs, 10 best vehicles in their 10 best lineups each year going forward. Any comment?
Yes. I mean, I didn't read the article in Car and Driver. I read a quick article not so long ago. Yes, the car is better than... It's just a lot of the same car and a lot of the same feel, as you just said. Just it does everything a little better, and yes, it is a little more stable at high speeds without compromising on comfort, which is always the hard thing to accomplish with performance cars. You know, usually the better the car handles, the stiffer it is and the less comfortable it is. So life is always about compromise, and no different in the car world. So car manufacturers try to find the best compromise, and some find a better compromise than others. And I always, you know, and I'm going slightly on a tangent now, I always say that to me, Mercedes and Audis have the best riding cars around, period, end of story. And they handle pretty darn well as well. The GTI is not an absolute hardcore sports car. It's a sports hatch. You know, it's been around since 1976 in Europe, and I think late 70s or 1980 here in the U.S. And yes, you know, it's probably faster than the preceding versions, although the engine is pretty much the same. It weighs probably a little bit more because it's a little safer. You know, cars always weigh more and get a little bit bigger. But, you know, the high-speed stability is useful in its home market in Germany, and that's pretty much it, which is, as far as I know, the only country in the world that still has unlimited speeds allowed on sections of their highway system. Not all,
and it's definitely true that this model was a European version. You can see on the picture that it's got European plates on it. So, indeed, they were probably, well, let's say they did this test at Volkswagen's Eralesian Proving Ground near Wolfsburg, which has a 5.4-mile straight, I gather. I don't know whether it is or not. It's a little confusing whether it's 5.4 miles in straight or what. in straight length before you hit curves, or that, whether it's part of the curve.
Yeah, that test track is made to be long enough, and the turns and the banks are designed in such a way that basically it's a straight line.
This article starts with the author saying that with the GTI's digital instrument panel indicating 155 miles per hour in seventh gear, the test driver, VW test driver, they weren't allowing any press people to drive it, starts commenting, or the press guy starts commenting on what he can perceive to be the different feelings of this vehicle versus the preceding model. And therein, never do I see anything else in the article saying that they have dropped down to 50 to 80 miles an hour going around corners, which maybe they did, but where he talks about the sharpness in turning control, recovery, yaw control, and all the other things. To your point about the weight, I don't know whether you're absolutely right about that, in that they have changed the front substructure from steel to aluminum, and they say it saves 7 or 8 pounds over the old front system. Whether that goes through to the overall weight of the car or not, I don't know.
It's
a great-looking car, and it will sell in spades, since it's going to be the only model, as we talked in last week's show, that VW is going to be bringing to this country for the U.S. buyers to buy. It will not be the top-performing model. It will be the entry-level model, but it's going to have GTI on everyone that comes off the boat, I guess. Is that correct, Jay?
I am not quite so sure.
I think so.
But what I am sure of is a number of them will be standard manual transmissions. Which,
correct.
Even though that is a dying breed.
And buyers will be able to get that, and I suspect a lot of buyers will want to get that. I went for a test drive in a 2019, back in 2019, with a friend of mine who was thinking of purchasing one. And we never were able to get on the, you go with the driver, the salesperson goes with you in most dealerships, going out of a dealership to do a test drive, and usually three rights, and then the final right is back into the parking lot of a dealership.
Yep.
And the road you get to go on in those four right-hand turns, unless you insist upon getting out on, let's say, a straightaway somewhere, is usually you don't get much over 30 to 45 miles an hour. And in a GTI, you may not want to do that, because you may want to spend a lot of time on curving roads, aggressively dealing with the throttle in speeds up to 45 or 50, even 50 miles an hour on the short straightaways you get to. I find it sort of amusing that this article is written basically at speeds well in excess of what, as you noted already, we can do here in the United States.
Well, it's virtual
and,
world.
So listeners who are listening to this and have any interest in looking at the GTI and have read this article will know that this car is a highly, highly capable vehicle, more capable than the preceding version. But whether or not you, the listener, who is in one, will ever be doing any of these things to feel this report's conditions about the car at speeds over 80 miles an hour is highly unlikely. So
I think we're finished with that.
Jay, you want to go on? Manual transmissions versus automatics. Is a topic that I think we wanted to talk about, because, as Jay mentioned, they are becoming rarer and rarer every year, it seems, because so few of them are being sold. And Car and Driver also has an article on in their August issue saying, save the manuals, with an exclamation point. But they blame it on the paddles and the computer programs that can shift an automatic transmission faster than the hand can move the shifter between the six or seven gears on the manual transmissions that are now remaining in vehicles. And that is indeed true. Again, I like to say, who is going to ever spend time figuring out whether or not a manual transmission has to be as fast as automatic to have fun driving? Conversely, I think it's more fun to shift a manual transmission car. You don't have to worry about getting from 0 to 60 3/10 of a second faster or 5/10 of a second faster because an automatic shifts faster. Nobody's spending that time trying to go from 0 to 60 in the maximum or the minimum time you can do it in any of these cars that have manual transmissions. What's really fun about them, Jay, and I hope you agree, is driving country roads like we have around northwestern hills of Connecticut, New York, and Massachusetts, and stirring the gears. And especially when you're spending a lot of time between second and third, maybe, or third
and
fourth.
What I would like to say, actually, about that is it's kind of interesting. In the same way that 7 months ago, 8 months ago, what we were talking about is people, at least we were being informed by our ingenious press, that people would never drive again because they would all be in cities in little podettes. And now, of course, thanks to certain major infrastructure change, people are running for houses and space and life in the away from urban. And one of the things that they are going to need desperately to get around, especially since there are, I mean, not that anyone wants to get on a bus, but is a car, a vehicle, maybe more than one, depending on the size of your household slash pod. So this now reopens an industry. This changes things because suddenly it's not, well, I need something to move me from this place to that. You know, there's room now for enjoyment.
Okay, the good news is, yeah, the car is not dead, not anytime soon. We're going to need cars to, if we're going to keep, if we want to get out of cities, we're going to need cars. The trend is, the recent trend anywhere near us is for people to get out of the city and come and live out here in the country. And yes, you need a car. And like you say, Jill, depending on what your household needs are, you'll have a wagon, an SUV, a sports car, a luxury car, and usually you have, you know, most households have more than one car, and you can have different cars for different purposes. And I go back to the fact that, yes, I think electric cars are coming because I think 80% of our daily needs can be met with an electric car. And so I think the auto industry, and I've said this again and again, is changing and is going to keep changing for the next few years. And we see new brands coming out. We see, you know, huge shifts in the market. And to that effect, there's a trend now to create electric-only brands. And, you know, which is, I think, one of the reasons Tesla is doing so well. It's a very specific concept. We make electric cars. Hyundai is branding its electric line of vehicles under the name Ioniq, which is at this point just one of their models, and they're turning that into a brand. We know Cadillac is turning their electric models to names that end with IQ, and they're starting with the Lyriq. Yeah, the market's going to change. We're still going to have cars. And I was actually surprised to see numbers in car sales. And one number I was looking at is how fast cars sell. And I always have an issue when you look at inventory, how long cars sit on car lots. And the fastest selling cars now in post-COVID times are, you know, the Chevy Trailblazer, which is a surprise, the Kia Telluride, the Honda CR-V, and that's no surprise. And they sell within anywhere from 20 to 40 days, with an industry average that's around 97 days. So obviously, some cars are staying on lots a lot longer than others. What is a little surprising is then when you look at truck numbers, even though trucks sell very well and are a huge chunk of the market, they tend to take a lot longer to sell for whatever reason. I can't imagine. Anyway, I was just going off on a tangent there.
Well, we will see how that tangent how it performs, shall we say, in actuality as more time elapses. Any car is doing particularly well or particularly poorly. I will say that I saw the chief something of Ford flogging his new Bronco, and I couldn't tell watching it whether it was because there was there'd been interest actually, or whether it was more of a "Hey guys, look at this! Look over here, please."
Well, there is interest. I'll chime in on that a little bit because I had interest. But does the interest translate into buying? We noted on an earlier show that Ford introduced an initial allotment of 3,500 of the new Broncos, and allowed people to order them. They quickly doubled that to 7,000 because the 3,500 were sold out in nanoseconds before I ever even read the article that they were even available. And the 7,000 were also sold out with equal lightning speed. So, yes, there's immediate interest in the Bronco, as there was in Tesla, probably not at the same numerical levels. You can order them. They're not going to be available, I think Jay told us last week, until very late this year or early 2022. And then, even then, we're not going to get the whole model range for a number of months after the initial models that are available as early as maybe late this year show up on dealers' lots.
We go back to
the cost of these new fancy new cars. And I think I mentioned that the model that was available for purchase as a first generation, whatever you want to call it, line of the Broncos was all coming off of the line at $52,000, which goes over the $29,000, just under $30,000 starting range for at least one model. By you do the math, $22,000 I think or something. Yes. So the Bronco is probably going to do well initially. Whether it'll have staying power remains to be seen, because it is such a dedicated model to a certain clientele of buyers, namely Wrangler owners or Jeep people type people. It'll remain to be seen whether they have a luxurious enough version that it will be usable by the general public. So we'll wait for that. I don't know about cars that are slow selling. The industry says sedans aren't selling, and Ford has killed off its Fusion. Chevy's killing off or has killed off the Malibu. Fiat Chrysler has killed off the whole, Chrysler line of sedans, but not the Dodge level so far. But there's only what? The Charger is the only sedan, I think, that's being made in the FCA line. So
here's a tip. If you're in the market for a hot sedan, I was reading an article and then double checked on Auto Trader. You can there are a number of Genesis G70s, which was the car of the year, I think last year or the year before, one of the more recent ones.
It's the older model version of the model, right? Though
the G70 is a four door. All-wheel drive, yep. Or rear-wheel drive sedan. The base model comes with 2-liter turbo. And you can buy red ones that are sold as used models for under $30,000, which I think the car retails for, $45,000-ish or something like that.
And you save two ways in that. In Connecticut, for example, we pay the towns you live in tax your cars at a mill rate, similar to the real estate mill rate range, and you also save both in off the sticker price of a brand new version, but you also save greatly in many towns or in many states that tax cars as property, because you've taken away the new car price value that only lasts as long as it takes you to drive off the lot, and then they start depreciating rapidly, and the towns use Blue Books values to designate what your car is worth, no matter how many miles you have on it. So, yes, if you can find a year or 2 year or 3 year old Genesis 70, they're very durable, at least so far, unless they've been abused, and they are an excellent sporting car to drive. Another one, Jay?
Well, my point with that.
GTIs probably are also the same way in VWs, if you can find a good one. If you even find two or three year old new GTIs available after leases are up.
my tip about the red G70s was that there is a story behind it, and there was a small paint defect, and all the cars were returned to the factory to get painted, and then were sold back wholesale to dealers. And so you basically get a brand new car for like 30% off.
That's always a good thing.
They were brand new. I didn't catch that part in your initial discussion of it, and I failed to see that little defect and didn't hear about it in the press. So that's an interesting standpoint. And it's interesting that a car manufacturer would even do that kind of thing. I don't think any of our domestic manufacturers or the U.S. domestic manufacturers would be so forthcoming. The last time I knew of a manufacturer really doing something like that, if a car had a defect, was when GM brought out, what was their line of cars that they brought out for a while? They were plastic bodied and they had a cooling problem with it or something, so they recalled them and brought them back to the factory. Jay, help me on the model if you can remember it. It doesn't matter. But most of the time I have found when there's been a problem with the U.S. manufacturers, and this goes way back, so it may not be as relevant today as it was yesteryear, is that they would do everything in their power to avoid having to have a recall situation for something that might have been a manufacturing defect, because it cost them so much to do exactly what you're telling me Hyundai did for the G70 model.
I believe it was the...
There weren't a lot of them around, so it wasn't as costly. But
we heard
you call it back to the factory for a fix, you're really doing a recall of substance.
We heard Jay in the background say that it was Saturn, and our favorite planet, it was indeed Saturn.
Thank you, Jill. That's the one.
It
I was
actually Jay.
Exactly.
So that is always good to know. We've got a couple minutes left. Let's do safety briefly, and the reason I want to do safety briefly is a lot of people have settled into biking here, not just regular cycling, let's call it, and the usual lack of focus on both light road sharing on small roads, etc. So whoever wants to save them from my wrath, please.
Yeah, well, my daughter is a quote-unquote professional cyclist and actually rode, I think, 125 miles up to Mount Greylock this weekend. But the other night she visited us, and it was late afternoon, and she did not have any lights on her bike. And I looked at her and said, "What are you thinking?" You know, and I drove her home in the car. I think if you're biking, you have to have, you know, those flashing lights on, and I hate to say it, you have to have
strong strobe lights. I strongly urge them to be strong lights, and they're usually white coming for oncoming bicyclists and red in the rear, which is appropriate. But I also want to chime in, Jay, sorry to take it away, is that you really need to have some bright clothing on too, to really do it. Almost neon or day glow colors, because if you don't have lights, you're doubly in trouble if you have dark clothing, because you just don't see bicyclists the way we're driving today with all the distraction going on. It is not the first thing your eye picks up when you're going into a curve or you're looking towards where you're going into a curve and it's dusk or you're under trees or whatever. And as Jill said, the bicyclists are out in numbers. It's one of the big things that's taken on a new life with the way we are living today, and you just can't have enough lights or bright clothing on, in my opinion, if you're going to be biking anything but broad sunlight daylight.
You need to,
and even then you still need the lights, because they do. It's just like, you know, I'm seeing vehicles as safety, Jill, with new brake lights. I don't know whether they're coming standard or not, but on a Nissan vehicle, every time the driver put on his brake lights, it strobed, or her brake lights, they strobed for the first millisecond before they went to solid red, indicating
like
the brake is on. That catches your eye faster than a brake light going on.
And I think
so every little bit helps to speed up the response of visual visibility and recognition, and then needed action if necessary to avoid having a problem.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.